Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Arsenal Women Arsecast, the first Arsenal Women Arsecast of 2022. And I'm aware that I quite often say with these episodes that this is a special one. And to be honest, they are all quite special, so I'm okay with that. But I think this one's quite a special one. it's been quite a week, hasn't it, with the defeat at Birmingham last Sunday, which, you know, I don't want to dwell on it too much because most of this podcast is quite upbeat and refers to good news in the main. But I think that Birmingham game might have been the worst I've ever seen Arsenal women play in a few decades of watching them. I'm racking my brains for a worse performance. So obviously we had that, and that was quite unexpected, I think. However, the week has brightened up with two really significant pieces of news. The first that dropped on Wednesday, that Leah Williamson has signed a new contract with the club, which is just absolutely fantastic news. I'm sure everyone will agree. And I think the thing about Leah signing a contract as well, I said on Twitter that I found this to be the most important, maybe, contract renewal that Arsenal have to do at the moment. Now, everyone knows that Vivian Miedema is a world-class player and is in the conversation for the best player in the world. So, no, you know, nobody needs to really explain how important that Viv is to Arsenal, and with her contract expiring at the end of the season. And I think our understanding of that is that that's all still undecided. She hasn't decided yet whether she'll extend with Arsenal or go elsewhere. I think the thing is with that, there are more goal scorers in women's football at the moment, in elite women's football, than there are world-class defenders. That's the way I look at it. And I think Leah as a defender would actually be harder to replace than Viv, which again is not to downplay Viv's level of talent at all. I just think that there's potential for goals on the market, but there just aren't as many defenders. So, you know, and look, we've seen how results have been since Leah Williamson came out of the team with injury. So I think there's that aspect to it, the footballing aspect, but also I think for the club's image, I guess, for want of a better word. It was quite concerning that Leah last season was umming and ahhing about whether to extend her contract. And when she did, she only extended for 12 months because she wanted some assurances about standards being raised behind the scenes. And so there was that big question mark. And I think from Arsenal's point of view, if they lost 25-year-old Leah Williamson, a player who's grown up at this club and supports the club and everything else, that would be really concerning if she wasn't convinced by the level of the club's ambition. The fact that she has signed and that she is at this moment in time convinced by, you know, the club's project for the next few years is really, really enthusing beyond reasons of just keeping Leah Williamson. I think there's a lot to it as well about the club's level of ambition and what they have planned. So that's one bit of good news, amazing news actually, that dropped this week. The second bit is obviously the signing of Swedish forward Stina Blackstenius, which was announced on Friday afternoon and put everyone out of their misery. This is a signing that's been mooted for a few days now. It feels like more than that. We asked Blog News, we asked Jonas Eidevall about this last Friday in his pre-Birmingham press conference. And obviously he was coy on the name, but we had wind of the fact that Arsenal was seriously interested in Stina Blackstenius. It looked for all the world like she was going to go to Manchester United. But Arsenal kind of came in and they've made that deal happen. And really top class, 25-year-old striker, been doing really, really big things in Sweden and for the Swedish national team. And for those of you who perhaps aren't as familiar with women's football, the Swedish league is a very big and serious league and has been historically. It's probably moved into slightly more of a development league now, maybe a bit like France, in men's football. I think that's a fair comparison. They're a real kind of developer of talent, and I think there was a report released this week by FIFA about transfer fees paid in the women's game in the last year, and a lot of the most expensive players are exported from Sweden, and the Swedish national team remains a superpower. Silver medalists at the most recent Olympics, at the two most recent Olympics actually, and you know, they will be a good bet for the Euros next summer as well. So Swedish, you know, Swedish women's football is a bit of a superpower. And so for Blackstenius to come at this point in her career to Arsenal, I think that's, you know, that's a really, really big signing. I did speak to Jonas Eidevall on Friday afternoon and asked him whether the signing of Blackstenius was linked to the future of Vivian Miedema. He said it wasn't. He said he could see a world where he could play both of them in the same team, perhaps with Miedema in a slightly deeper role. But he also said that Blackstenius just brings slightly different qualities to the centre-forward role, particularly her ability to run in behind as well. So you know, he's got another option there up front at the moment. He also said that if Vivian Miedema does decide to leave this summer, he'll buy another forward. So Blackstenius either way is not the replacement. So that's, you know, that's quite good, I think. So those are the two massive bits of news that have dropped this week. So obviously this podcast will focus on both of those. In part one, we will speak to Leah Williamson herself, an exclusive interview for this podcast. No one else has it. No one else was sitting in on it. It was just us and Leah talking about her contract extension and a few other things like her legacy at Arsenal and her recent injury as well. And we're massively, massively grateful to Leah for her time. It's been a busy week for her. She's back in full training. Obviously, she's had the new contract stuff come out. So for her to take kind of 20, 30 minutes out of her Friday afternoon to speak to us, we are incredibly grateful to Leah for doing that. But I think we're even more grateful to Leah for signing the contract. So that will be part one, our interview with Leah Williamson. And then in part two, I'm going to speak to Swedish journalist Mia Eriksson. You may remember we had Mia on the show over the summer when Jonas Eidevall was first appointed. Now, Mia, obviously, being Swedish, follows Swedish women's football a lot. She's a football analyst as well as a journalist and a podcaster. So someone who's seen Stina Blackstenius's career up close over a number of years. So I have a chat with Mia about Blackstenius, about her career to date, about whether this is the right move for her, about whether she'll fit in, or sorry, how she'll fit in tactically with Arsenal. So I have a good kind of 20-minute chat with Mia in the second half. But for now, I will stop withering on, because I'm sure most of you have tuned in to listen to both Mia and Leah. I haven't just realised that rhymes. That's nice. But first, with no further ado, my interview with Leah Williamson on Friday afternoon. Okay, joining us now on the show, someone who probably needs no introduction, but I'll introduce her anyway. Someone you might have heard of, Arsenal defender Leah Williamson. Leah, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
No, thanks for having me on, as always.
You were the first ever guest on this podcast, on the first episode of this podcast. So, you know, one of your career highlights, I'm sure.
Exactly that, top of the list.
So obviously we've got you on because you signed a new contract this week, which made everyone very happy. You know, when I spoke to you in May, when you signed the 1 year extension, you know, you were quite open about the fact that you were looking for reassurances about the club's ambitions. I mean, having signed this deal, is it fair to say that you were reassured by the club's ambitions in order to commit again?
Yeah, so I think if you compare the place that we were in sort of this time last year, it was very different. And, you know, I sort of made that clear. It was a hard decision to decide to stay. You know, I had to think about how far I wanted to go and if that was the place for me to be. But I think that the work we've done internally has set the precedent for how we want to go on. And just sort of having that realization, sometimes you do just need a bit of a wake up call in terms of how do we keep progressing? You know, it's not win the league and then drop off. It's a consistent sort of journey, especially in women's football. You know how it goes. Everybody's growing all the time. So you can't afford to stop. And I think that they're what I heard from the club, what I've seen and the plans going forward are on their way to that. I'd be lying if I said we were the finished product. You know, we're not. But I think this contract, me signing my deal, was the easiest decision I had, just because, like I've said, you know, I'm part of this club. It's not like pointing the fingers and saying, well, you guys need to do this, and sitting back and watching. It's just as much my commitment to that as well. So, yeah, that's the reason I've signed.
And can you talk me through a little bit, I guess, the timeline of the talks and the contract and everything? Like, when did the talks start? And at what point did you start to think, okay, yeah, I think I really want to commit again?
The talks, you know, Arsenal were sort of in constant contact, I suppose. You know, the nature of the one-year deal last year is not really something we see in football. And I suppose they had to trust in me as well, you know, as a business, you wouldn't necessarily want to do it like that. But I think having been here for so long and them knowing the type of person that I am, it was just about staying in contact and seeing how things moved along. And obviously we had a great start to the season, which helped, but it's not the basis of the reason that I'm signing. But yeah, I think after working with Jonas for a couple of months, I had a good feeling. And then as we got nearer to Christmas, it was a lot clearer to me, let's say, that this is still exactly where I want to be and where I think I can still continue to develop while also playing for the club that I love.
And you know, you've said before about how you think the beginning of this season is possibly some of the best football you've ever played, and I think a lot of supporters agree with that. And something that's really struck me, giving away my age a little bit here, but I've watched a lot of Arsenal players come through and make that transition. Like, I remember when Emma Byrne was like 19, and when Kim Little was 17, and Jen Beattie, and Kelly, I even remember when Kelly Smith was 18, and like watching these players kind of go from young prospect to like leader of this team, Alex Scott as well. And I really sense that transition in you as well. Do you feel that as well?
Yeah, I think the nature of my position is obviously, you know, where I've been playing at the back and as a centre-back, it's a real, I don't know, like an anchor position, isn't it? You know, it's we start a lot of the attacks and we prevent a lot of the goal-scoring opportunities, obviously. So I think that, I've said this word before, but the being reliable in that, I think that's really what has changed. And maybe it does come with the maturity and just sort of, you know, experience. As somebody always said that to me, that the best trait a centre-back can have is experience, and you can't rush that, you can't force that. It just happens as it happens. And I think this year, I think all of those sort of things have come together nicely. And I do feel a lot more, I don't know what the word is, but maybe just ready for that. You know, ready for that sort of extra pressure that comes with having to be on top of your game week in, week out. And I was obviously able to deliver that up until my injury, which is what pleased me the most, that it was a consistent thing. And it wasn't just, you know, when you're a young kid, you have good games and then you'll have an absolute horror. So, yeah, I was happy not to have any of those this year.
And another thing you said kind of when you signed the contract last time was that you felt you had this reputation for being a ball-playing defender, but that you wanted to be known like as a defender as well.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you're getting towards that with the way you've been playing this season?
Yeah, I think so. I think that the way, another reason, you know, staying in this country, the WSL is such a competitive league. You know, you come up against lots of different types of forwards and teams that have different threats. And obviously that's been tested, like I say, before my injury. And I think that I've always known that I was an athletic defender and I had the sort of the pace and that ability to sort of match a striker in that area, but actually being, you know, strong and sort of that mentality shift to being brutal almost and ruthless in that area. I think that's what I've added to my game now.
And, you know, you referenced your injury and I don't want to kind of dance around it. You know, I recall you kind of hobbling in the last kind of couple of minutes of that Spurs game and hobbling off the pitch as well afterwards. But can you talk me through that injury? Were you surprised by the extent of it when the scan came, when you felt the pain? Did you expect it to be this bad an injury? What was kind of the deal with this particular injury?
Yeah, I have and quite well known amongst my teammates and family, a very, very low pain threshold. So it was much to my surprise as everybody else's when the results come back as bad as the tear was. I was in quite a lot of pain for quite a lot of the game, all the way through, really. So it was, something that I needed to learn, obviously, about my own body. And I don't know, you know, you're playing in a derby, a North London derby. We're not, you know, the game wasn't going the way that we wanted to, and I didn't want to leave the pitch. But naturally, it's all learnings from my side in terms of the amount of damage that was done, but also that I had no idea. It just wasn't, you know, it wasn't as painful as it turned out to be results wise. But I've obviously presented quite well throughout it, so it's not been. It's been a series of good news, I think, since the injury, after the initial diagnosis.
And, talking about some of the stuff that Arsenal have done behind the scenes, one of the things they've done is to add Gary Lewin. And obviously, I guess, unfortunately, but you've had a lot of cause to work with him in recent weeks. How much of a positive addition has he been, and what's it been like working with him through this injury?
Yeah, obviously I've worked with Gary before when he was here previously for a short while. And, you know, it's funny because Gary's, if you're an Arsenal fan, Gary's a club legend. So I always look at him like that. He's just his knowledge and his experience is sort of second to none. And you wouldn't find many around that have what he has in that area. And he's just, you know, the guidance, I suppose, he gives to us and you know, the rest of the staff, and just that sort of Gary's a guy that when he says something, you believe it, whether or not he's telling the truth or not. So to have that around is definitely a good thing for us. And I've obviously been using it a lot recently, but yeah, he's a guy that sort of just makes you feel at ease and like he knows what he's talking about, which is always positive to have around.
And in terms of the injury itself, I mean, no injury ever comes at a good time. But I'll tell you something. There was a photo of you, I think, during the Brighton game, maybe, where you're on the ball smiling. And I know you tweeted a picture of it, and a friend of mine messaged me and said, "This is the jinxiest picture I've ever seen in my life," which unfortunately came true. But
yeah,
like in terms of the timing of the injury, particularly with how you were playing, with games at Wembley and the Emirates coming up, did it feel like the worst possible time, maybe?
Yeah, it's a funny one because naturally missing Wembley was so hard. Even the game against Barcelona at the Emirates, you know, take the meaning of the game away, like take the result, the need for a result out of it. These are games that you, especially somebody like me who's just constantly trying to raise my own level, these are the games that I need to play in because they're the ones that make you better. So that was gutting. I was a bit worried about how I'd be during the rehab. You know, I've not been injured since the first couple of years at Arsenal in terms of this long. And then I really struggled because I just felt like I was a young kid that was going to fall off the face of the earth and everyone would forget, I existed. And I felt like a little bit of perspective was necessary this time in terms of I haven't stopped for a long while in terms of the football calendar. And I've sort of made this jump from not really playing international breaks to playing every one I go away and, you know, going to a tournament in the summer, and my body needs to adjust to that as well. And also, you know, like I say, football is my life and I give everything to Arsenal and England when I'm selected to play. But I'm very much a believer of things happen for a reason and to take the positives and football aside, without missing those games, I had the Christmas break, which is a break in fixtures, which doesn't happen. We've had 4 weeks without a fixture over this time. So I haven't missed so much there, I suppose. And also it's just an opportunity to sort of step away and refocus. And I'm really glad because I feel, especially with the contract signing, I just feel very at peace with where I'm at. And I'm actually really confident to go back into football, which is a nice thing. Because obviously when you get injured, you sort of don't know how you're going to return. And we still don't know, but it's been a nice sort of refocus for me and to sort of appreciate how good things were going before I get injured and just trying to reach that again. You know, I had a taste of it and now I want more.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, actually, because I've spoken to players before about how they deal with injuries, and some just say, I want to disconnect, go away, refresh. And some say, I want to sit, I want to watch the games, I want to watch the team without me in it, so I understand my place in it better. Which one of those, or how would you say you've used this time that you've been out?
So I think naturally, and especially with the type of injury that I had, it's not like, you're off feet for so long. It wasn't that long before I was back doing stuff. So I was constantly working and I was constantly in and around the girls, but I was definitely, I needed to sort of, it's hard, you sit in a team meeting and then you have no effect on it. It's not that you don't want to know the information. It's not that you don't want to be involved, but the game comes at the weekend and you're not involved and you can't be involved. But just sort of maybe, I think I used it as reflection time. So like you said, how do I fit into this team? What is my purpose? How can I help when I come back, kind of thing? So that was definitely a learning for me and being, because normally, like when I was younger, I just disconnected, and then you take the time that you're almost gifted. I know it doesn't sound like, doesn't feel like that when you're injured, but you're given this time that you would never normally have. But naturally I'm so close to my family and, spending time with them that I would never have got. I went away with my mum, my grandma, and that to me is as precious as anything. I think I'm quite proud of how I've dealt with it, if I'm totally honest, and staying balanced and not disconnecting too much. But there was definitely a time where, as we get closer to coming back, I knew I needed to be back in those meetings and really around the team and just being a bit more present. So definitely a balance of the two.
And just a couple of questions to wrap up. This is going out on Saturday, so the announcement will have been made, and the second half of this podcast is about Stinner Blackstenius. So I just wanted to get your take on that signing. I can't remember whether you've played against her before, but just your take on that signing for Arsenal.
Yeah, I think I've never played for her at club level, and I'm not actually sure senior internationally. I don't think I've played against Sweden, but when we were younger, she was the striker of the age group. You've got players like her and Viv, and you'd come up against these teams when you were younger, and I'd think we're in for a hard one today, kind of thing. So I've always had a lot of respect for her, and obviously what she's done on the international stage, especially over the summer, is really impressive. So I'm really pleased with it. She's got a great work ethic, and I think that's what we need here, just to keep us pushing and keep everything competitive. So I've obviously welcomed her into training today, and it's great to have on board.
And a question that's like slightly out of kilter, but I've had a personal curiosity about Katie McCabe's goal at Villa Park, the big lob, the celebration after that. I have to admit, the second I kind of saw it from the sideline, I was like, Bergkamp against Sunderland. Were you aware of that at the time, or is that because I know that goal was scored technically before you were born? But like, were you aware of that at the time?
Oh, my brother used to watch DVD after DVD when he was an Arsenal fan, of like Arsenal through the years, and you'd see all the celebrations. And obviously I used to love Bergkamp. I used to watch YouTube clips of him. I think he's the only player I've ever done that with, actually. So I knew it was his celebration. I can't say it was exactly in my mind. We could maybe say subconsciously, but as soon as I did it, as I was running back, I was thinking that was what it was. More shocked, to be fair. I can't give her too much credit that I thought it was amazing. I was in shock. But as soon as I was running back to restart, I was thinking. And then I seen my Twitter blow up afterwards, and I thought, everybody's on the same page.
And I guess, just a final question, and I don't really know how to phrase this, but obviously there's a lot of talk about your Arsenal connection, and everyone knows now that you grew up as an Arsenal fan, that you've been at this club and how much it means to you and everything like that. But I wonder whether, I get curious about this sometimes, I wonder whether in your mind, again, I don't really know how to phrase this, but Kelly Smith, for example, same deal for her, grew up as an Arsenal fan, kind of came through and everything like that. But when people think of Kelly Smith, when Arsenal fans think of Kelly Smith, they probably think of that a bit. But when everyone thinks of Kelly Smith, it's like Kelly Smith, the footballer, legend. It's almost like Arsenal's like a separate thing. And I wonder if you ever think about this in your kind of legacy, is there a part of you that thinks, like, I have the Arsenal thing and I like that and I love that connection, but actually I really want to be known as a player in my own right now? Is there anything in your mind about, I guess, uncoupling those things a little bit?
Yeah, I have thought about this before, because naturally, you know, this, like you say, there's certain players that you think of. You think of like a Steven Gerrard, or he was so good that his footballing ability spoke for itself. And then you make the Liverpool connection, and you know what he was. And I don't think I'd ever want to separate the two, just because I'm so proud to be at Arsenal. I think sometimes I'm conscious that I really connect emotionally too much. And I don't think I do, but I do just have to check myself, because I'm there to play football, and it's not about romanticising it to the extent of which it is. But then I think if I'm authentic to myself, that's how I feel. And every time I go out, that is what I think about, and that is who I want to be. I'm less bothered about, you know, when I step on the pitch for Arsenal, I'm less bothered about what I come across as an individual, but more about what I'm doing for the team. So I'd never want to uncouple it. But I do think that if you're good enough, then people will think that regardless. And that's up to me to sort of prove to everybody. And I have my opportunities at England to be Leah, not the Arsenal player. And I think I would never sacrifice, the connection that I have with Arsenal. And if people want to think of me as part of Arsenal instead of myself, then I'm comfortable with that, as long as I'm doing my job for the team. Obviously I wouldn't like to finish my career and just be somebody that loved the club a lot and everybody liked for that reason. I'd like to be known as a world-class footballer that actually stands on her own 2 feet, I suppose.
Yeah. Well on the way, I would say. Leah, we've taken enough of your time already. Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks even more for signing the contract. And just, you'll have seen it, I'm sure, on social media, how happy that made everyone. So thank you for your time, and for the signature as well, frankly.
Thank you very much.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog.
big thanks to Leah again for her time and for her insights. And, you know, absolutely shamelessly my favourite interviewee, I think, at Arsenal, as well as, you know, possibly my favourite player as well. Really, really indebted to Leah for giving up her time for us, and particularly at quite short notice, because I didn't know that news was going to drop. I was prepared for the Blackstinius announcement. I wasn't prepared for the Leah Williamson announcement, so it was cobbled together quite late on. And again, that is because Leah was willing to do that at short notice. So hugely, hugely grateful to her and to Daniel Lane at Arsenal for helping to make that happen. So now, That's the contract extension. How about the new signing, Stina Blackstinius? As I said at the top of the show, I'm speaking to Mia Eriksson, who knows all there is to know about Swedish women's football. Not just Swedish women's football either, a real expert across the sport. But obviously, being Swedish, Sweden is a speciality of hers. And honestly, nobody better to speak to about Stina. And not least because Mia herself, you know, isn't an Arsenal fan. So I think it's really good to have that fairly neutral perspective as well. So this is my chat with Mia Eriksson about Stina Blackstinius. So joining me now on the podcast to discuss the signing of Stina Blackstinius is Mia Eriksson from TV4, and I'm going to butcher the pronunciation of this, the Fotbollskanalen podcast in Sweden, which is debuting on Tuesday the 18th of January. And one of their upcoming guests is going to be Arsenal's Frida Marnham. But I thought I'd get Mia on just to discuss everything about Stina Blackstinius, really. So Mia, thanks very much for joining us and welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thank you. I'm happy to provide you with some knowledge about the Scandinavian players, because yeah, you have got the deal about talent from here.
It's really weird on this podcast. We end up with somehow with correspondence. So we had we kept signing Australian players. So I kept getting Sam Lewis back on the podcast to talk about Australian players, and you might become our kind of default Scandinavian correspondent. So. We might have you back.
I'll be happy to.
But let's talk Stina, because this is a big signing for Arsenal. First of all, what can you tell us about her as a player? What are her attributes, and where does she play?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen Stina Blackstinius play for many years now, because I as you all know by now, I'm a Linköping fan, and I'm involved with that club in many ways as well. But I mean, she's a proper number nine. Obviously we're talking about the fact that it's good to be flexible and that you can play across the forward line every positions. But I think that this is her strength. That she really is very special for the number nine role. Mm-hmm. Her deep runs, and I also know that if you would speak to Peter Gerhardsson about her as a Swedish head coach, he would say that she is probably one of Sweden's best defenders as well, because she's a good player when it comes to press. So I think for Arsenal this will be very exciting for the fans to see how she will improve and even put her influence on the Arsenal's pressing game.
I'm going to come on to that a bit later about what Jonas really wants from a striker compared to what he's got at the moment, maybe. But just kind of sticking with Stina at the moment, she's nearly 26 now. I know she had a spell in France with Montpellier, but other than that, she's been in Sweden. So, I mean, probably fair to say this is a step up for her in her career now. Is she ready for a move like this, in your view?
I think if you want some background information, I don't know how much Arsenal fans will know about her, is that when she played in Linköping, she played with Pernilla Harder, Magdalena Eriksson, Jonna Andersson, Fridolina Rolfö as well. And they all got signed and picked up by bigger clubs to move out in Europe after they won the Swedish league title back in 2016. And her move was a bit surprising for all of us that had followed that team, because she went to Montpellier in France, like you said, and the other ones left for, I mean, we all know Chelsea and Wolfsburg and Bayern Munich. So I think it was a surprise move in some way. And then, I mean, obviously we don't know the background to her choice, but it's been a lot of interviews with her after that, saying that she had struggled a bit in her private life because her father was sick during the time. And then she didn't really settle into the French football culture with the team and the training. And she has been very open about that. So when she returned to Linköping, and they had a really good team that year because it was the World Cup year, 2019. But it didn't work out for Linköping. I mean, they had Lina Hurtig and Mimi Larsson, who, and they are also national team players. They played in the front line for Linköping. So then she went to Gothenburg, Göteborgs FC, who now is BK Häcken. I think the best part about watching Stina Blackstenius play is she's also very good. I mean, she always has a lot of assists as well. She doesn't just score goals. So I think, I mean, in that, it's now or never for her. Yeah. I'm going to say that because that's what the talk is about. It's now or never for Stina Blackstenius to enter the big European stage and to take the role and responsibility as one of a club's most important players.
Yeah, and actually that sounds quite similar, her career path to Katrine Veyer, a Danish winger we had at Arsenal, who also went to Montpellier and also didn't really fit in there, albeit Arsenal wasn't a massive success for her either. Hoping things go better for Stina Blackstenius. But how is she viewed in Sweden? Because, you know, I think we're really seeing certainly my impression from the Olympics, where she scored 5 goals and she led the line. And, you know, we know that even if maybe the Swedish league is becoming more of a developer of talent, the Swedish national team is still a superpower. And, you know, and she led them to that final with 5 goals. So what about, you know, her performances for Sweden and how she's viewed more widely by Swedish fans?
I think we rely on her to score goals when Sweden play big tournaments. And I think we have, I think we rely on her on that because that's what she has done all the time. She have had, I would call them silent periods, you know, like before the World Cup back in 2019, she had a bit of a, like where she disappeared because she didn't score. I'm sure it was when she scored versus Canada, it had been a while since she has scored for Sweden. But that goal was so important. You know, I think she's viewed at like that type of player, you know, go silent a little bit. And then when it's really needed, you score. And then everyone forgets about these silent periods. Obviously it has worked out very good for her after the World Cup in France as well, because like you said, the Olympics, she was one of the key players. Then you have a season like this now from the summer and up to here where we are. Then she hasn't been that type of player for Sweden because she was injured a little bit. And then we had Lina Hurtig who was that player. I was kind of surprised to see that she didn't play versus Finland or Slovakia, but she didn't, Blackstenius. So then Lina Hurtig played. And I think for Sweden, I think this move is good as a national team. I think we're famous for the fact that we can defend, and but we need to score goals to win games as well. Obviously improved a lot lately as well. But I mean, she is the player that's going to score. If she's on, she's going to score. She'll press off the ball and she's going to score when Sweden wins. So,
yeah. And I think, you know, Lina Hurtig, that's good competition. She's doing good things at Juventus at the moment under Joe Montemurro. But I guess you touched on this a little bit earlier, but one of the things I've been thinking about this signing with my, I guess, much more limited knowledge of the player is that I've had this feeling this season that, look, Vivian Miedema is the type of striker that every manager wants. But in terms of mould and the way Jonas has Arsenal playing and he wants that high press, and to be fair, I think Viv is perfectly capable of that and she does that. But I've always had the impression that really if he could choose, he'd choose more of a target style striker that, you know, Arsenal play a lot more long passes now, and and we know that Viv is much more, you know, she's more Dutch, right? She likes ball on the floor, move into the number 10 role. I've had the feeling for a while that actually what Jonas would like is a more typical number 9, and actually he's played Caitlin Ford there quite a lot this season. So I guess, look, this signing will start the rumour mill about Vivian Miedema, but I guess, do you think that she would be more suited to, you know, Ida Ball, as some Arsenal fans have called it? Or do you think that there is potential for her to play with Vivian Miedema if Viv ends up staying?
I mean, I was actually thinking about this before we started to record, but I'm going to give you, I mean, in Häcken, she played with Paulina Hammarlund. Who is also, she's been HCL injured now, but I mean, Stina Blackstenius is a perfectly capable player to play with another striker. She is not sure if every partner is, you know, like up front, like you say, because they all prefer different style of plays. But I think this is why she gets so many assists every season as well. Because she knows to play with a partner. I think that's one of her biggest abilities.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if she's almost more of an analogue for Caitlin Ford, because Caitlin Ford at Arsenal, she, like with Vivian Miedema here, right? She largely plays wide, but when Viv doesn't play, she can play up front, and she does it a very different way. But like, Can Blackstenius play wide as well if, for example, Vivian Miedema stays? Because if Vivian Miedema stays, she's going to start in the number 9 role. So would there be potential there for Blackstenius perhaps to almost play that Caitlin Ford role and be a wide player, but almost like a second striker as well?
I'm sure she would, but I don't think that's her best position. Mm. She never plays wide in Sweden. I mean, Sweden usually play with 3 up front. This is where Lina Hurtig is, like, because she can play wide. Mm-hmm. But Stina Blackstenius always played the central, you know, number 9 role. I think in Sweden, she plays alone up front or with another striker alongside her. So obviously, yeah, it's going to start a lot of rumors with the signing, because I think, also, you're into it yourself. You say Jonas Eidebo is the type of style like Sweden's national team play. I was actually when I was in Barcelona in November, Peter Gerhardsson was there to talk about how Sweden played, and he showed a lot of clips. Then he showed a clip with where Sweden were off the ball and would start the press. And he really focused on the way they use Stina Blackstenius that way. And she is like, I don't know if you even say this in English, but we call it workhorse in Sweden.
Yeah.
So she is Sweden's strongest and most working player in that way, because you can see she has to run a lot and she does it. Sometimes you can, if you can look at the game and you see, oh, but the only thing she does is running off the ball a lot. But when he showed these clips there in Barcelona, you could really see her, what impact she had on what was happening next. So I think it's going to suit a coach like Jonas Eidevall a lot.
Yeah. And what's quite interesting, I think I'm right in saying they've never worked together directly in Sweden. And I think we know that Manchester United were very interested in this player. And look, as someone who supports the men and the women's teams, one of the things I love about supporting the women's team is in this world, Manchester United can be on the verge of signing a player and Arsenal can come along and say, no, we'll take her, actually, which is quite nice. But I mean, in terms of like if she'd gone to Manchester United, I mean, I think she would have been the main attacker there without doubt. Whereas at Arsenal, I mean, I'm sure she'd play like the number nine position, but there are lots of other attacking players there. How do you see those two profiles for her? Let's say in an alternate universe, she'd gone to Manchester United and been the bona fide star player compared to maybe coming to Arsenal, where still a really, really strong, really good player, probably the best like number nine that's actually available on the market at the moment. But perhaps having players like Nikita Paris, maybe Tobin Heath around her, like, do you have a sense of which of those moves would be more suitable for her?
I think it's always so hard to talk about this kind of stuff. But if I'm just going to step out from my, thinking about feelings for another person, when I saw the rumors about Manchester United, I was thinking, oh, this is perfect. Mm. Because in Manchester, I think she will have more pressure on her to deliver in Arsenal than she would have had in Manchester United. Not to downplay Manchester United's ambitions, but, they are, trying to get up there. Mm. Arsenal is up there already. So I think, and then you have this background story with her, with where she didn't manage to get it going in Montpellier, even though she scored. But a football player has to feel good with the surroundings and the teammates and everything like that. So I think the pressure is really on her now. I actually looked at the way Manchester United played before Christmas. That would have been perfect for her. Mm. Just put her in. She would be the starter in every game because Russo in Manchester United, she's still learning that number nine role. But here you have a player who's, ready and done to just walk on in the pitch and play like that. So I think that will be the difference here. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see how she deals with this.
Yeah, particularly if Vivian Miedema does go, and she ends up being the replacement, although I think bringing her in now is potentially quite a smart move in that respect, because if Viv does go in the summer, it perhaps removes a layer of that Viv's gone and she's in, like she's already had a little bit of time to settle.
Yeah.
Although I think probably it's more likely that the signing's happening now just because of the way the Swedish season is and it's close season. So I think that's more likely, but it might have a fringe benefit there. In terms of what she did with Häcken last season, she led the Swedish league in goals and assists, which kind of proves your point about she can assist as well. We all know that historically Sweden has been and still is a really strong league, probably still more of a developer of talent now for the likes of England, Germany, Spain, and those leagues. But how do you think, you watch a lot of WSL as well. How do you think those numbers will translate in terms of making the transition from Sweden to England? Do you think it's a jump at all? And if so, how big a jump?
Yeah, I think it's a jump because now when this is really interesting, because the one thing that every fan wants to know when a player moves to another country to play football is, what's the difference? So when we interview players on our podcast now, we always speak about this, and they all say, yeah, it's a difference. And the difference is that the WSL is more physical. It's more speedy, more direct football. I think this is where it's interesting as well, because looking at Jonas Eidevall and FC Rosengård, how they played very, not very English. I'm not going to say that because you can't compare it like that, but still, I mean, direct football and you want to play, football, I mean, with the ball. In Sweden, I mean, it's slower. The pace is slower, and it's been more physical over the years. I've seen it because I've asked some defenders in Sweden, like, you really wrestle out there more than you did a couple of years ago. So I think that's also one thing. I mean, Stina Blackstenius, she's well-trained. She's not thin, like small. And I think that will bring good into the English game for her. So I think that's, yeah, it's a difference, and you have to be honest with that you can't say. But I think that being a national team player, playing like Stina Blackstenius has done over the years, I think the difference will not be that big for her. It's more of a thing that, will this type of football suit her?
Yeah. I have to say, I think from what I can gather, her profile and what Jonas Eidevall wants to do with Arsenal do sound like a good match to me. Now people will remember that you were last on the podcast over the summer, just after Arsenal announced the appointment of Jonas Eidevall, and you gave us a lot of great insight. And I remember one of the things you kind of said, which is really, really borne out, is watch Jonas on the touchline. He's great entertainment. But perhaps not amazingly Swedish in that way. But I think, 6 months here, Arsenal fans have gotten to know his personality, the fact that he's quite direct. Personally, I've got a lot of time for the way he deals with press conferences, and he's very direct in some of his answers. I've heard the words, "I don't care," come out of his mouth many, many times. He doesn't mince his words. So given like what you know about Stina and what you know about Jonas, what about in terms of a personality fit? Because we know that Jonas is this kind of quite larger than life, quite direct kind of character. How do you see, given they've never worked together before, that the Stina and Jonas personalities working together?
Yeah, first of all, if she signs for Arsenal, she will know all this about Jonas Eidevall, because she has also been playing in the Damallsvenskan a lot. So we all heard him shouting, and we know how he looks like when he's very passionate about something. Or angry, but that's a bit tricky, because Stina Blackstenius is known to be a bit laid back. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say shy, because I don't know that, but you would probably, get the impression of the fact that she's quite shy. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. But I mean, we all have, if you have been around the game in the Damallsvenskan, or if you've been a player, you know what you get from Jonas Eidevall.
Yeah. And I think it's important as well, to kind of emphasize, he doesn't just rant and rave. And no. Arsenal have plenty of players that are quite laid back. And I've spoken to Frida, and Frida's very, very taciturn, and there's obviously not a problem there or anything like that. So I don't want to give the impression that he's just a madman that shouts at everyone all the time. Like, I think he is quite affable as well. And I can
he's
say that.
He's happy sometimes as well. So, yeah. And he shows his happiness as much as he shows every feeling he has. He's like very un-Swedish that way, because usually we are like, okay, we keep our feelings in check. yeah, even if we feel something. But I mean, you have to admit, it's kind of it's nice to see. Maybe sometimes you need it, but I do think that if you're a player under Jonas Eideval, you learn to just shut your ears maybe sometimes when you play, and then you learn to open them when he says something you really need to hear. So that's my impression.
Definitely. One of my big regrets this year is they've moved the press area at Meadow Park, so we're not behind the dugouts anymore. And this season of all seasons to have done that, I feel like I've been robbed of something. Just in closing, while we're talking about Jonas, like I said, you came on in the summer and gave us some great insight about Jonas Eideval. So he's been here, well, 6 months now. We're halfway through the season. I realise I'm asking you this on the back of possibly the worst Arsenal performance I've ever seen. So hoping not to introduce too much recency bias, but what's your impression so far of Arsenal under Jonas? And have things gone as you thought they might in terms of playing style or things like that? Or are there things that have surprised you?
No, nothing has surprised me. But I do think, I mean, I don't know where I read this or if I spoke to someone about this, but going into a new league as a coach, every coach has to adapt to a league and a style of play in the league. And it's not obvious that you know these type of things before you stand by the sideline and see it happens while it happens. So I think what we are seeing now is maybe that's his challenge. And I do also think, I mean, it's interesting, not just in terms of the WSL, but you have Arsenal, a team that plays in the Champions League now. You're going to go into quarterfinal now from a team that absolutely smashed the other top team in the WSL. And I think this is where we're going to see if his coaching abilities is different from other English coaches, or if you want to have a result that will show you that he's doing good. I think that this is going to be a massive game in terms of that, because if you don't know your own league, I mean, 100%, and then you're going to coach your team into the Champions League, I think we're going to, it's going to be interesting to see how he deals with this.
Yeah. And one of the things that really stuck with me from our last conversation on the podcast was I kind of asked about, you know, potential weaknesses or drawbacks. And you said that a Rosengård, like one of the few things you could really pick on was sometimes when they played a team that sat in, they struggled to break teams down, I guess, because of that transitional style of football. And I guess we've seen that against Birmingham. Arsenal scraped a draw with Tottenham as well, who played quite similarly. So, I mean, those are two examples. They haven't really struggled in other games, I guess, but that really stuck with me, and I've looked for that. And maybe I've looked for it too much, but I do think that maybe that's been borne out a little bit in some of the performances against the kind of teams that really do sit in. So I think you're right. How Arsenal adapt to that, or how Jonas adapts to that, is going to be really, really key and really interesting. And we're going to see, you know, his capacity for growth as a coach, I think, definitely.
I also think that this is kind of interesting to talk about now, 6 months in, because I think, this is what I'm thinking, he has been very influenced by the English type of football when he coached Rosengård, because he wanted them to play like Arsenal play now, and that will make a perfect match for most of the time in the WSL. But I mean, we see Chelsea struggle with the same thing, you know, low defense, low block, and then this direct type of football won't work. And then what, I mean, as a fan, when I watched the game, I need to see some key to unlock that that challenge a team face when they face that low block. And I think that, I mean, it worries me a little bit that they can't seem to find a key to that door when you choose this tactical approach.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess just as a last question, just to bring it back to Blackstinius, I mean, one of the things that's really leapt out as well about Arsenal under Jonas Heidewau is he likes to use the wings. For my money, hasn't quite used the central areas quite as much, and players like Jordan Nobbs and Mane Urbuchi, for my money, haven't been used as well as they should have been, because they really fill up those central areas. But a lot of the game is built on getting the ball out wide and getting crosses in. Do you think that Blackstinius would thrive on that kind of service, maybe more than Vivian Miedema does?
I mean, I was all of a sudden I started to think about, okay, how many headers does she usually score? But that's not. I mean, what I do think she's good at is if she's getting crosses with her back towards the goal, mm-hmm. she is good at turning fast and like if the ball comes from high crosses. But crosses in general, nah, I don't think that will bring the best out of a player like Blackstenius as well. What I do think is if you get the ball out on the wing, this is where Manchester United has been very successful their last three games, because they have been using Elatoun and Staniforth as wingers. But since both of them has abilities to play in the number 10 role, they move back in, not just going wide. Because if you're a winger, you will move naturally out wide. And then you see that these strikers, or just the forward players, they're coming up to fill up the spaces with runs. I'm hoping we will see that from Arsenal as well if Stina Blackstenius joins now. Because I think, you know, coming from deep runs and scoring in pace, that's what she's good at.
Yeah, yeah. And that's interesting as well, because we know Viv likes to drop deep and she likes to get involved very much in central spaces. And particularly on Sunday, I watched against Birmingham closely, and whether it was her fault or someone else's fault, I mean, it's probably the coach's fault, she was kind of getting in people's way quite a lot, or other people were getting in her way, because I think she just likes to come back towards the centre circle. And I guess it sounds like Blackstinius is maybe more a player who will link play, but maybe not in that way, maybe more kind of going out to meet the wide players and you know, maybe combining with them. Whereas I think Viv likes to combine with the kind of central players a bit more. And you know, I think I had the impression before this conversation, and I'm even more so now, that Blackstinius sounds, even if she's not as good as Vivian Miedema, because there aren't many players who are, that maybe she's more of a Jonas-type striker. But I guess we'll see in the coming weeks and months. But Mia, thanks so much for your insight yet again. Just a reminder that about the TV4 and Fußball Kanalen podcast, which is debuting on Tuesday, the 18th of January. And they will have Frieder Mahnen as a guest eventually, not on the first episode. But yeah, so you can hear more of Mia there. But until the next time, perhaps we sign a Swedish player. Mia, thanks for joining the show again.
Thank you very much for having me on. It's always good to be on some Arsenal talk.
And that's all we have time for this episode. Again, big thank you to Leah Williamson and Mia Eriksson for their time, their energy, their insights in putting this podcast together, and to both of them for being flexible with their time, with their own personal time. Really exciting week, I think, for Arsenal, and we hope that this episode has captured some of that. We will be back with another episode before the end of this month. Certainly, we will probably do a mailbag episode. As most of you who read the site probably know, I am expecting at least one other arrival in this January transfer window, and the player I'm expecting, Rafael Isouza, is a player I happen to know something about from covering the Brazilian national team. So you know, we'll see if and when that is announced, and when that's in the bag, then maybe we can talk about that a bit. But we'll put out a mailbag episode for you with one or both of Alex and Pippa involved. But until then, thanks for downloading the episode, for listening, and for
I guess for absorbing our coverage. And I just wanted to say at the end as well, we do have a Patreon, which I'm not sure how many of you know about, particularly those of you who only follow the women's team, probably. And I guess I just wanted to put it out there that if you feel like the coverage of Arsenal women is worth, you know, a few quid a month to donate to help the site, then go to patreon.com/arseblog and you can sign up there. And I just wanted to say the reason we get the level of information that we get, the level of access that we get, is that when we went part Patreon a couple of years ago, Andrew, our editor, the first thing he did with that money was basically to come to me and say, right, let's extend the coverage of the women's team. So the reason I have, you know, the time and the links to get the kind of information, to get the kind of access to speak to players, is because Andrew made that commitment with the money we get for the site. And so if you think, you know, if you have the money to spare and you think it's worthwhile, then, you know, maybe check out our Patreon for a few quid a month. Absolutely no worries if you can't. None of this content will be paywalled ever. There is no danger of that. You will still get it for free. We still absolutely love all of the people who click on the coverage and read the stuff and interact with the site and listen to the podcasts. That is enough. So please don't think I'm guilt tripping you or anything like that. But if you've got the money and you think it's worth it, then, you know, we won't say no to the money either. But enough of that. Thanks so much for listening to this podcast, and we'll be back with another one in a couple of weeks' time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.